since halftime, and Cousins is sacked. Guess who? T.J. Watt putting an exclamation on this one.
Well, the way the second half went, that feels like a very fitting end of how this game is going to conclude. They had no answer for the Pittsburgh pass rush. T.J. Watt was a force the entire game, had two strip sack fumbles negated for penalties.
Yeah, that's how the game ended in Atlanta, courtesy of Fox Sports. And you get a win any week, especially on the road. That's a good thing. Although, as any coach will say, we have things to work on. We have our Odyssey Sports Director on our video link. You can see Jeff Hathorn at KDKRadio.com on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. First of all, he stole Billy's call of the guess who. The guess who is Aaron Dunn.
That's right.
Not T.J. Watt, but
that's right.
I get his point.
That's right. Guess who? Aaron Donald. All right, so I like most Steelers fans, on the edge of your seat most of the game, not sure where this thing was going to go, and then suddenly you end up with a victory in Atlanta, and those are big. You can't underestimate how big it is for this team because they haven't won a lot early in the seasons in recent history, have they?
Yeah, I mean, an opening win is always big. Getting one on the road is nice. Getting one with a new offensive coordinator, with a new quarterback. I think all of that makes that a little bit extra special. I mean, listen, you know it's going to kind of be like this most games for this team. Defense is going to lead it. You're going to rely on special teams. Hopefully not for every point going forward, but you're going to rely on special teams to help you as this offense tries to work through it. You know, what Steelers and Steelers fans are experiencing isn't that dissimilar from a lot of other franchises when you lose a franchise quarterback. Normally, it takes a while to get back to where you were, and the Steelers are trying to find a way to get that offense running. Obviously, week one, the best thing you could say about the offense, they didn't turn it over.
And they got in field goal range. Fortunately, we have a great field goal kicker, but we have a new punter due to an injury. Cam Johnston, an Ohio State grad who Mike Tomlin said was phenomenal up until that point, and he doesn't throw that word around too often in reference to players, as you know. So
especially punters.
Yeah, especially punters. That's a wrinkle that certainly you didn't anticipate. So who's the new guy?
So Corliss Waitman is in. He was when the Steelers had the expand. Well, every NFL team had the expanded squads in during COVID in 21. He was their extra punter because you're allowed to keep extra players. He was born in Belgium. He moved to the States when he was 15, and that's when he first found out about football. He was playing soccer, decided to give football a shot, played at South Alabama, and the Steelers gave him a run. Now he's played for a couple of NFL teams, and they're hoping that now he can be consistent enough. He won't be Cam Johnston, but that he can be consistent enough to be a weapon at punter. So, I mean, we'll see. He doesn't have a ton of experience, but that's been growing, and he's punted for Denver before. So Tomlin said that was a factor, at least in this week, in this decision.
And how about Chris Boswell? I mean, how about him punting for the first time in his career in a game and a really critical moment of that game? Man, this guy is amazing. He really is. And obviously, if you don't have Chris, you don't win Sunday.
Right. He's about as cool as calm as it gets. I mean, whether it's kicks, whether it's walking on the field seemingly with no nerves to, you know, just knock a 43-yard punt like he'd been doing it in practice all the time, which he hasn't been for years. There's nothing that seems to faze this guy. And I hear that he's a good golfer, which probably explains why, because things don't rattle him.
Let's talk about Russell Wilson. I think the intrigue for this game, going back to Denver, the team he came from, it didn't work out for him there. They're still paying 99% of his salary, too. But yesterday we found out that it looks like Justin Fields, unless there's a recovery. How much of a concern is Wilson's calf injury, and are you okay with starting Justin Fields?
Yeah, it's so different from last week. You know, you're coming off being named the starter. You're going through practice. Then Thursday, something changes. That tightness returns. And now essentially what Tomlin was saying yesterday is that he's got to earn that job back. Not that he necessarily won't be the starting quarterback, but he's got to prove that he can make it through some practices, that calf is 100%. And because that he hasn't shown that yet, they're going through with Justin Fields as the starting quarterback, at least early in the week. That could change. And then what you worry about, too, is, all right, Russell Wilson's a competitor. He wants to get on the field. Does he push that and say he's better than he really is because he really wants to get on the field? That's where you have to trust that Wilson's going to be honest. But I am kind of curious what it's a full week of prep going to be like for Justin Fields. I thought he got better as the game went on. We talked about inconsistency with punting. I mean, that's been his bugaboo his whole career. But we'll see how the week plays out. But right now, it's Justin Fields' team.
Let it reveal itself in Denver Sunday afternoon. All right, do you have a few more minutes? I want to talk a little backyard brawl if you can.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, Jeff Hathorn, our Odyssey sports director on the Big K Morning Show. What about them ears and Panthers next? College football, the backyard brawl, is back in the Berg Saturday at 3:30 at Acrisure Stadium, the 107th edition. Pitt and West Virginia. And with a preview, we're with our Odyssey sports director, Jeff Hathorn. Jeff, so the first two of the reinstallment of the Backyard Brawl, a split. Pitt won 2 years ago in front of 72,000-plus here, lost last year, and I think Pitt's a little better than they were last year. What do we know about West Virginia?
Well, once again, they like to run the ball. That's going to be a challenge. It was a challenge, you know, for the defense against Cincinnati. It will be a challenge against West Virginia, a mobile quarterback who can use his feet, but also can pull up and throw. This is going to be a little bit – this is probably the best offense that they've faced from a from just a system standpoint. So that's going to be a challenge for them. And defensively, they have always done a lot of things. And obviously, defensively, they shut Pitt down, although they weren't the only team to shut Pitt's offense down last year.
Yeah, that said, what was your takeaway from the Cincinnati game, this dramatic 21-point down with basically 4:50 left in the third quarter? Most people thought it was over, and they haven't had a comeback like that since 1971. So it was a big energy builder for this team. What a critical game. What was your takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, you're watching at first I was listening to the game, then watching it. And then giving up big plays, not getting it going on offense. Eli had missed some open receivers. It just wasn't clicking. You're wondering, are they going to make a quarterback change? He stuck with Eli Holstein. And then you mentioned with about 5 minutes to go in the third, it just changed. It clicked. Some big plays started happening. So momentum went on the offensive side, and defensively they carried that over and made some stops, forced some punts. You say momentum doesn't go from game to game, but I think these guys will be able to take from this game, whenever they're in, wherever they are, if they're trailing, to have that ability like, hey, we did it in Cincinnati. Let's trust each other. And I think you saw a lot of that in that fourth quarter, even though a lot of these guys have never played together before.
I know coaches never like to look beyond the next game. Week zero, as Coach Narduzzi said, and I understand that, but we can. So it's a good possibility, win or lose Saturday, Pitt should be 3-1, completing the first third of the regular season. I think, would you say people would be surprised by that, or is that what they anticipated?
Wow, so you're already giving a loss to West Virginia and dismissing the Youngstown State Penguins.
No. Wow. I'm just suggesting that's the worst I think it could be.
Oh.
And it would be, you know, I'm going to say they're going to beat the Mountaineers at home and they're going to end up 4-0. But but playing devil's advocate.
I think this year is about kind of establishing that offensive system. Obviously, you want to have a good season. You want to, you know, prove it that you're better than you were last year. But this offensive system and showing recruits and showing people that might want to leave other programs of what this system is about and why they would want to come to Pitt, I think is as big as anything this year. To show that you can have success with it, to show maybe you've got a quarterback that other skill players would want to come and play with. I think those are the things you want to establish, and you're starting to see that. I mean, you saw it against Kent, but you really saw it in that fourth quarter against Cincinnati and how at ease they seem at playing at that kind of tempo, which is still kind of odd because most of the time Pat Narduzzi teams have been very slow to the line of scrimmage. So if you can do that, and they have done that the first couple of games, maybe the first five and a half quarters of the season, then I think you're going to have a successful season. You'll be able to get it back to where you want it, where you had it when you won 20 games over two seasons.
ACC Team of the Week, ACC Running Back of the Week with Desmond Reed, and he also had over 100 yards receiving on record. We don't know that that's happened before to a Pitt player. ACC receiver Kenonte Mumfield of the week, specialist of the week with Ben Sauls, and back-to-back and Eli Holstein, rookie of the week. So, wow. I don't think a lot of people anticipated that.
And Larry, I think it's worth pointing out, you know, when Pitt has had good years, they've had a difference maker. They've had a guy that could bust a big play. It was Jordan Addison, Izzy Abanikanda. Last year, they didn't have that. This year, they got it. At least through a couple of games, Desmond Reed has been an unbelievable difference maker through two games. And if he could stay, and I know that's been a big topic, there's a story on 93.7thefan.com right now about him staying healthy. If he can do that, this guy can help you get quick scores, and that can keep you in most games.
He's 5'8", 175, so they got to keep him healthy, but you can't help but want to use him because he can break a play on any given play. In fact, he was running at almost 21 miles an hour, and he blew through guys in the secondary. It was like a flash. So a lot of excitement for the Backyard Brawl. 3:30 at Acrisure Stadium. We're on the air at 1:30 with the network pregame show and the Fan. And just a note, a big traffic note, Jeff. As you know, the Pirates play at PNC Park. 1:05 is first pitch. So do the math. There's going to be a premium on getting a parking spot on the North Shore Saturday.
Very much so. I mean, this was going to be a noon kick and then a 6:40 baseball game, but, you know, sometimes television gets in the way. So, yeah, get there early. Not that you wouldn't want to get there early. It's a backyard brawl. It looks like it's going to be a beautiful day.
It'll be a fun time.
Maybe instead of 9, you get there earlier.
And, Jeff, you don't have to worry about that space. You use Mr. Rooney's space during Pitt games right next to the stadium, so...
Well, the driver number drops me off, so I'm good.
All right, partner, thank you. We'll see you on the south side and then down the stadium on Saturday.
See you, Larry.
Odyssey Sports Director Jeff Hathorn. In this half hour, you're going to have a chance to win tickets to the Outlaw Music Festival coming up this weekend with Willie Nelson, Bob Dylan, John Mellencamp, and many more. In the meantime, a lot of people debating the debate from last night in Philadelphia. It was fiery. We anticipated that it would be. Donald Trump and Kamala Harris.
Why are we allowing these millions of people to come through on the southern border?
He'd prefer to run on a problem instead of fixing a problem.
They've been trying to get Roe v. Wade into the states, and through the genius and heart and strength of six Supreme Court justices, we were able to do that.
In over 20 states, there are Trump abortion bans, which make it criminal for a doctor or nurse to provide health care. In one state, it provides prison for life. I am actually the only person on this stage who has a plan that is about lifting up the middle class and working people of America. I believe in the ambition, the aspirations, the dreams of the American people.
We're doing tariffs on other countries. Other countries are going to finally, after 75 years pay us back for all that we've done for the world.
And back and forth they went.
They're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats.
And post-debate, they caught up with Donald Trump just off stage.
All I do is say the truth. I say the truth. If I lose votes or gain votes, I don't care. But this was my best debate. I thought it was very good. I thought she was very weak on foreign policy.
She
was very weak on the border. And I'm very happy.
And then post-debate, Kamala Harris at a watch party in Philadelphia.
Tonight, I think, highlighted for the American people what's at stake. I started the debate by talking about it, and it became apparent, I think, throughout those that about an hour and a half. We have got to win Pennsylvania. And we are going to win Pennsylvania.
And joining us on the Big K Morning Show, Carlos T. Carter, who's the president and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh. Carlos, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm good. So what aspects of the debate do you think will have the most impact on voters' perceptions of the candidates?
Well, I'll start with each candidate. So I think for Kamala, I felt like she was very presidential and mature. I think she came across as a commander of chief, and actually surprised me because I haven't like seen her speak a lot. Like I didn't even watch her thing at the Democratic convention, but I thought she was very impressive. I thought she focused on facts more. Now, she didn't answer some questions like about in the beginning about were Americans better off. I think she could have done better than that, but she took that as an opportunity as politicians do to kind of just, you know, put what she wanted to get across. But I thought she was really strong and made an impression in giving Americans a sense of hope and future and spoke to the hearts of Americans and said, I'm one of you, and gave example. And she showed model selfless leadership, which is very important. Trump, on the other hand, I think he did not come across as presidential, but delivered a consistency, and he usually has a petulant brand of doom and gloom, and I'm the one to fix it. So I thought he was consistent with that, you know, and yeah. And then I think he started off strong, but I think he fell into many traps. So I think that made probably not the best impression in terms of like around his ego with the crowd size and things like that. And he went off. I thought he talked a lot more about himself, but that's what he does. And I think, you know, his supporters are used to that. And I think he did a good job tying her to Biden. But overall, I felt like she ate him for lunch. I was just shocked. But you could see the polish as a prosecutor and things like that. But I felt like, he said she was weak, but I felt like not even Republican or Democrat, I just thought she ate him for lunch. I was blown away, actually.
Bottom line, Carlos, do you believe the debate is likely to influence voters' opinion or sway undecided voters?
Well, I'd say most people are pretty much, people who support Kamala are there, people who support Trump are there. But I do think it definitely may sway some people that were in the middle, right? I think it definitely may certain things, like especially like if people were immigrants. Like I was stunned what he said about cats, and I wasn't ready for that, about what he said about people eating pets. I was really shocked, you know, just that gave a xenophobic and kooky uncle vibe that I think that you don't want. I was really disturbed by that. So I think things like that can impact, right, people that were, you know, on the fence and are immigrants or care about people from other countries. But I definitely think it could sway some people who needed that, you know, say, okay, what I like. But I think most people have their minds made up already. But I definitely believe that set a strong message and would give people more to work with for sure.
You can go to ulpgh.org anytime for details. Carlos T. Carter, President and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh. Carlos, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, a chance for you to win tickets to the Outlaw Music Festival this Saturday. And also, Paul Rasmussen has done some mining. And where do you hear the story about fish? Hey. Willie Nelson, Bob Dylan, John Mellencamp. How about Robert Plant and Alison Krauss? All the 2024 Outlaw Music Festival Saturday at the Pavilion at Star Lake. And we got a pair of tickets for you. 412-922-1020. That's going to be a great show. There's a lot more talent there, too.
Beautiful day on Saturday as well. What a great show.
Pick a number.
Six.
Caller number six, 412-922-1020. Aaron's on it. the Outlaw Music Festival Tour. We'll give you a chance to win tickets tomorrow and Friday.
It's hard to pick out a... I'm sorry.
That's all.
It's hard to pick out a favorite Willie Nelson song, but this morning I would go with Whiskey River.
Whiskey River! Yeah, how about him? Yeah. 90 plus, they're still out there doing what they love.
Go Willie.
And last night, Electric Light Orchestra, Jeff Lynne's ELO, was at PPG Paints. Sellout crowd. Phenomenal show. Phenomenal show.
Did you go?
I did.
Yeah.
Then I had to, I DVR'd the debate and then came back and stayed up and watched
it. What a letdown after a great show.
Yeah, I know. It's like homework. I had to do it. Had to do it, Paul. All right. In the meantime, you have mined a story about these fish crackers.
I have a question for you. Why are goldfish crackers shaped like fish?
I have no idea why.
Well, Carnac would say, no, actually, it's a guy by the name of Oscar Cambly. He was the head of a Swiss commercial bakery, and he wanted to surprise his wife for her birthday back in 1958, so he came up with this new cracker mold in the shape of a fish. He baked it that afternoon, presented it to his wife that night. And the reason why is because his wife's astrological sign is Pisces.
And that's it.
That's all there is to it. And Pepperidge Farm licensed it for the U.S. back in 1962. I didn't realize that it goes back that far.
I feel like, and now you know the rest of the story.
Because Pepperidge Farm remembers.
And what about best places to work you
have?
Oh,
this is
fresh.
Just came in just a little bit ago. Sheetz has been named to the best workplaces in retail list by Fortune and Great Place to Work. And Sheetz is second on this list, only behind Wegmans. High, high marks for Sheetz. Congratulations.
Yeah. Good stuff. Next time you have a goldfish cracker, you'll know the rest of the story.
What's your sign?
Mine is Capricorn.
Mm-hmm.
My moon is in Sagittarius, which is painful.